My name is Diliana Gaitaljeva. I'm Bulgarian journalist and also Middle East correspondent. I've been a war correspondent covering the Middle East and Africa. I covered the war in Libya, Gaza, the Arab Spring, and in Syria. And now we are probably the only war that I'm not covering now. This is the conflict in Ukraine.
Now, I'd just like, if you would, to remind us of some of your work uncovering the trail of weapons, because to me, there is very few people, Diliana, that have managed to do what you have achieved in following the paper trail of weapons to ISIS. So can you just tell us what you managed to find out and how you did it?
In December of 2016, I was reporting on the Battle of Aleppo when the terrorists from al-Nusra Front, this is the al-Qaeda affiliate in Syria, retreated from their positions. We were able to enter in an underground warehouse full of heavy weapons. These weapons were used by al-Nusra Front against civilian areas in Aleppo. And these were 122 millimeter Grad rockets originating from my country, Bulgaria. When I returned to Bulgaria, I continued my investigation and I published a few months later a bigger investigation based on diplomatic notes and documents. These diplomatic notes originated from the Azeri embassy in Sofia, and they were diplomatic clearance requests for diplomatic flights and also diplomatic clearance about 350 diplomatic flights from Bulgaria, over Bulgaria to Bulgaria, and basically from the whole of Eastern Europe to the Middle East. All these diplomatic flights were paid for and chartered by the Pentagon, the government of Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates. And these documents proved that in the span of 2 years, the Pentagon and Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates organized and smuggled. I even calculated how many tons. Now I can't remember, but it was hundreds of tons of heavy weapons from Europe to Syria and Yemen on diplomatic flights under diplomatic cover. The reason why they used this diplomatic cover is that diplomatic flights are exempt from checks, inspections, and air bills. And this is how 350 diplomatic flights transported without any inspection, any regulation, the weapons for terrorists to war zones.
Absolutely shocking. But look, there are special checks on weapons, and you can't just, as any arms dealer knows, you can't just ship those weapons around the world freely. You have to give something called an end user certificate. So in other words, you have to state what is the end destination of those weapons before you're even allowed to put them in a container, whether it's diplomatic or otherwise. So what about these end user certificates? Because I don't imagine that these weapons were shipped around the world when it says the final destination is ISIS on there.
The end user certificates in some of the cases were fake, or in other cases it was written that the end user was Either the U.S. government or the Saudi government and the Emirati government or their militaries. In another end-user certificates, it was written that the end-user is unknown allied forces, unknown allied forces of the U.S. government. But it wasn't specified who these international allies were, which means that this end user certificate is fake, because such a document requires the exact destination and end user to be indicated. Here in this case, we didn't have the exact user indicated. It was just a general term. U.S. allies. Who are they? The United States has hundreds of allies around the world. So this was fake end user certificate.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. Especially that the weapons apparently, some of them anyway, are being shipped to the United States, but ending up in the hands of ISIS. I wonder if there's been any comeback on the Americans for that. But look, we've got a crisis right in the middle of Europe now with Ukraine. I wonder, could you give us an idea of what is the attitude of people in Bulgaria, Diliana? Because, you know, you are really part there of the old Cold War Eastern Bloc, one of those countries that's not part of NATO yet, but starting to lean towards NATO and certainly part of the European Union. So how do people in Eastern Europe view the way that NATO and the West has slowly moved eastwards over the last, well, it's now 30 years or so?
Bulgaria is a member state of NATO. And Bulgaria follows, or the politicians of Bulgaria follow strictly and unconditionally the politics and the decisions taken by NATO. However, the population of Bulgaria, they are not all of them in they not all of Bulgarian support such kind of policy. I can give an example. Two days ago, the Prime Minister of Bulgaria asked the Defense Minister to file his resignation. Nobody realized what the reason for this was, but then it became clear that NATO or the United States wanted us to send all our fighter jets to Ukraine to assist Ukraine. But Bulgaria has probably five very old fighter jets that are almost not operational. But we need fighter jets to protect our country. And they wanted from Bulgaria to just provide all its fighter jets to Ukraine, and to be, and given the fact that we are so close to this conflict, to be without any kind of defense, this was very stupid decision. So our defense minister opposed such a decision, and he was forced to resign. So this is, in short, the situation. Europe, Bulgaria including, has become a totalitarian continent, literally. Many TV channels, news agency that show the other side of the conflict or alternative point of view, they were banned and shut down. So this is the situation here in Bulgaria, and not only in Bulgaria, the whole of Europe. Totalitarian continent, no I can't call this democracy what is happening.
Well, no, not if you're being told what to do with your military by foreign powers. These aircraft, you're saying that they wanted to use them in Ukraine, but of course that could bring a confrontation with Russia if they're being used in Ukraine. Or did NATO just want to station them near Ukraine somewhere?
From the announcement that they made, the Ukrainian ministry said that they will go to Poland to take them and to fly with them from Poland. So not directly to Ukraine, because this will mean Bulgaria is a NATO member state. This will mean direct confrontation between a NATO member state and Russia.
Right, and I suppose the Americans are thinking they would rather Bulgarian jets were used for that rather than American jets, because it would look better. I mean, this is bizarre, isn't it? Because much of this conflict that's brewing now in Eastern Europe, more as we see with the militarization of Ukraine, much of it is being led not by Europeans, but from the other side of the Atlantic.
The Europeans, they are very much involved as well, because if they really wanted peace and really if they really wanted to end this war, they could very easily do it by simply stopping to ship weapons, fighter jets, heavy military equipment to Ukraine, because in that way they just extend the war, which means more and more casualties, destruction. Why is that? What's the point to extend the war so that many more people will die, the whole of Ukraine will be destroyed, both sides of this conflict, Russia and Ukraine, will suffer heavy losses? This is the idea, I think, of all this military aid that is now being sent to Ukraine, because it is clear, and they even said it many times, that Ukraine cannot win in such a war with Russia. Why is that then? They know that Ukraine will lose such a war, confronting Russia, a nuclear power, with and its army outnumbers the Ukrainian army. So why is that? The idea is to keep on this conflict ongoing for a longer time, because in that way they could pressurize Russia, imposing more sanctions, demonizing Russia and the president of Russia. They don't care about the number of people that are going to die. This is not important. They are just statistics that, for these bureaucrats in Brussels and for the United States.
So do you think it's possible for the old Warsaw Pact countries to remain neutral these days?
Actually, no, because some of us are in NATO, others are in different position. I mean, until recently, for instance, Kazakhstan. Now Kazakhstan is in very good relations with Russia because of the events that happened there. But until recently, this wasn't the case. And I don't believe any of these countries would risk, including Bulgaria, because this is not the right decision to confront Russia. For what? This is like a proxy war between Russia and the United States. If the United States wants to wage a war with Russia, not let them not use other small countries, like in this case.
Now, you've conducted an investigation into 11 Pentagon biolabs in Ukraine. Now, I had no idea that there were any Pentagon bio labs in Ukraine. What have you found out about them, and how did you discover this?
This is a very old investigation that I published in 2018. First, I learned about one Pentagon-funded biolaboratory in Georgia, which is called the Lugar Center. One local journalist from Georgia told me that they had such a laboratory. In the beginning, I didn't believe it. It sounded like science fiction, but I checked this information, did thorough research and discovered more and more pieces of evidence and obtained the documents from the U.S. Federal Contracts Registry. And it turned out that the Pentagon has spent $2.5 billion on a biological research program in 25 countries around the world, and the Pentagon has funded such biolaboratories in 25 countries around the world. Mainly, these biolaboratories are located in countries bordering on the U.S. main rivals, Russia, China, and Iran. In particular, the Pentagon has funded biolaboratories in the following countries from the former Soviet Union that border on Russia. These are Ukraine, Georgia, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Armenia, and Azerbaijan. In Ukraine, in particular, the Pentagon has funded 11 biolaboratories. In addition to these 11 laboratories that the Pentagon has funded, according to information that I obtained from the U.S. Federal Contracts Registry, the Pentagon has awarded a private American company to rebuild and equip two new biolaboratories in Kyiv, the capital of Ukraine, and in Odessa, another big city in Ukraine. And the end date indicated in the documents is 2023, the next year actually. The project started in 2021 and will be completed in 2023. So it is not just 11, it is plus 2, it is 13 laboratories actually. And all this information is based on documents, and they were published by the U.S. government. But I discovered recently, to be precise, a week ago, I discovered that these documents were removed or were not accessible on the U.S. government website.
It's interesting, the Pentagon funding something like this. It doesn't sound like a civilian program. What is their excuse? What do they say is going on in these bio labs?
Yes, it is a military program. It is not a civil program. It is entirely under the control of military scientists. They say that they help and assist the health of the local population. But here comes the question, why would the U.S. government spend $2.5 billion on the health of foreign citizens instead of on the health of its own citizens? It doesn't make sense. If we don't focus on the logic now, but just read what is written in the documents, for instance, in Ukraine and in Georgia, according to information obtained from insiders, the U.S. government has conducted biological experiments on allied soldiers in Georgia and Ukraine. I'm talking about 1,000 soldiers in Georgia and 4,400 soldiers in Ukraine. The project that I'm talking about now, it was funded by one agency which is part of the Pentagon. It is called the Defense Threat Reduction Agency. And that agency funded these two projects in Ukraine and Georgia involving local soldiers. In the documents, it is written that all volunteer deaths will be promptly reported. And according to the according to the project description, the project included blood draws being taken from these soldiers for biological research. So there isn't a lot of information about the procedures or the risks involved, but the fact that it is written all volunteer deaths will be promptly reported means that these are risky practices that could potentially have a lethal outcome.
Well, that's right. I wonder whether you think that these are in the process of being shut down. I would have thought they might be a priority for the Russians to want to go and have a look at these labs. After all, you are saying, is it, I think, 11 or 13 laboratories?
For sure. These military biolaboratories have been a concern to Russia for a long time, and many times Russian diplomats and even President Putin kept raised this issue many times, because these are military facilities performing biological research on the Russian border. And also there was another scandal when documents appeared, and they appeared again from the US Federal Contracts Registry, and they actually exposed the American program in one military laboratory in the United States, in which the Pentagon was seeking to buy Russian synovial tissue or biological material. And in the document, it was written in the description that was released to prospective awardees that the Pentagon wants only Russian tissue, not Ukrainian or Caucasian in general, only and specifically Russian tissue. So this caused again a scandal, because President Putin then said and asked, why is this program, what are they doing, why are they collecting Russian biological material, only Russian, not Ukrainian, not Caucasian in general. And it wasn't a surprise to me that, for instance, during his press conference today, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov again stressed that the United States has funded military biolaboratories in Ukraine, and they are deemed a threat to Russia because they are on the Russian border, and potentially they can develop biological weapons, potentially. This is what Sergei Lavrov said, and they had said this many times before.
One of the aspects of biological warfare, which some countries have admitted reluctantly to observing, Israel is one other example, is this idea of trying to target diseases at particular ethnic groups. Now, this is destructive. It's a kind of form of eugenics. It could be construed as a form of genocide if you're trying to target a specific biological weapon at a specific ethnic group. So no wonder the Russians are concerned about these labs. We've heard nothing about this whatsoever on the press in Britain, certainly. Well, and now we've seen also Russia Today switched off over here by the authorities, whereas this, of course, is actually a very important issue that the Russians may be concerned about, particularly with their history with the Nazis in the Second World War. So these stories are not making their way into the West, Diliana. I wonder what you make of the censorship, because it does, to me, smack of a lack of confidence. Even in the Second World War, we didn't censor in Britain the Nazi broadcasts. We countered them with our own, what we consider to be better information, but we certainly didn't try and jam Lord Haw Haw, Radio Luxembourg, broadcasting propaganda. Now it seems we don't have the confidence, and that we are now deciding we're going to actually blot out any information from RT and from Russia in English. So I wonder what you make of this as a journalist.
Oh, no, this is not journalism at all. I can give an example, because Bulgaria until 1989 was under we were a communist state, and we were under the ruling of the communist regime. So what the Communist Party and the communist regime did was to ban the American media at that moment. It was Radio Free Europe, and it was banned. And people, I don't remember that time because I wasn't born then, but my parents and relatives told me how people secretly smuggled radio stations and listened secretly the radio of the free world. So now we have the opposite. Here in Bulgaria, as part of the totalitarian European Union, also all Russian TV channels, IPs, everything is banned and blocked. It is not accessible. So now people switch to other methods to be able to read or to listen to alternative, the other side of the story, alternative point of view. And you can just access the site of RT. They have their own player, not only YouTube player, and you can watch RT. Why is that? I mean, if people want to be informed and to hear the other part of the story, they can. Why is this to block the TV channels and to make it harder for the people to remove media from social media? This is totalitarianism. This is what it is. This is dictatorship. I have no words how to put it, because what they did during the communist regime in Bulgaria, now the European bureaucrats are doing the same now. This is not journalism. This is a totalitarian regime, literally. For instance, in Slovakia yesterday, their prosecutor general said that if anybody publish a comment on social media in support of Russia, because for Slovakia it is that Russia is performing genocide, so who supports Russia on social media by commenting in favor of Russia will go to jail, because he or she commits a crime and will go to jail and could be imprisoned by up to three years in prison. Can you imagine? Is this normal? Could this happen in your country?
Well, it's pretty shocking. And it sounds to me like, certainly in the Czech Republic, a return to a form of dictatorship, Diliana.
In the whole of Europe, it is the same. What is it to enforce one country? Bulgaria is the poorest country in the European Union, probably in NATO as well, and to enforce this country, which has 5 old fighter jets. And by the way, Bulgaria purchased new F-16s from the United States, but only on papers. Bulgaria paid for these fighter jets, but they didn't come. And nobody knows when these fighter jets will come. They are not. Their production is not has not been started yet. So you can imagine how many years we will wait for fighter jets that we already paid in advance. Bulgaria even took a loan, bank loan, to be able to buy fighter jets from the United States, and they did not come. And it turned out that under the agreement that Bulgaria signed with the United States, there is no provision that could punish the United States in such case, like the case that we are that I am talking about now, namely, no fighter jets.
Yeah. Well, we are laughing, but this is not obviously
laughable. And in that situation, when the United States even failed to perform, to complete its obligations to provide us with fighter jets that we already paid, and now they want from the poorest country to provide its five old fighter jets. These are old fighter jets from the Soviet Union, very old fighter jets, so to provide them to Ukraine so that we will have zero fighter jets. This is what they wanted from us, and because our defense minister opposed such a decision, he was fired.
Well, that's amazing. I mean, maybe if you send your old Soviet fighter jets to Poland, maybe the Americans will send you some new fighter jets, but you'll have to keep...
Absolutely no, believe me. They said that they have not started to... the manufacturers explained that because of the COVID pandemic, the production has not started yet.
Ah, right, so they don't even exist.
No, oh, well. They exist only on papers in the agreement, so that there is an agreement so that Bulgaria can take a bank loan and pay to the United States for fighter jets that don't exist and probably will never exist. They exist only in the agreement.
Well, look, there are various people saying they think the Russian invasion and occupation in Ukraine will be completed in maybe 2 or 3 weeks' time. I wonder... how long do you think it's going to take for the Russians to finish their mission there? And how this is all going to end, Ileana?
I'm following Telegram channels, military Telegram channels of war correspondents that are on the ground there, because I don't trust the propaganda which mainstream media are spreading now. I can give an example. Some TV channels, for instance, Israeli TV channels, they broadcast footage claiming that it was from Ukraine, it was from Star Wars, from the movie. So, what is this? I don't want to watch footage from Star Wars. I want to watch the real journalism. So, everything in the majority of reports, let's say, articles, live broadcasts, I just question it, because I myself was a war correspondent, covered a lot of wars, and I know that really the first casualty of every war, this is the truth. And I have seen how my colleagues manipulated their reports, how they exaggerated or the opposite, invented facts, presented them as facts while they were either propaganda or absolutely fake fake news. I don't trust what Western mainstream media that I'm supposed to watch, because the European Union wants us to watch only Western propaganda, and I don't follow them. Now I'm following the military channels on Telegram of different war correspondents, and what they filmed they was private military contractors, Americans or allegedly Americans, they look like American private military contractors. And no matter that the United States doesn't engage directly in combat activities, there are American contractors being deployed there. So this could probably be a factor that will extend the war, the conflict, because it is not only Ukraine. They are supported by private contractors. We don't know how many they are. We don't have that information, and there is no way to have it because here everything is blocked. We are behind, like in the communist regime, behind the Iron Curtain. Now it is the same. We are behind the Western Curtain, and we don't know what's happening actually in Ukraine.
Yes, but how long do you think this is going to go on for, and how will it end, Diliana?
Every conflict, war, doesn't end well. I don't see. I can't say it will. One side will win, the other will lose, because all sides win or lose. Every war ends with heavy losses, because even 1, 2, 3 human lives, this is huge loss for the mothers of the soldiers that died. It is huge loss. So I can't make a prediction, because the West is doing their best to extend this war. So it depends on the capabilities of Russian, their Russian army. We can see that they have a very good and very impressive capabilities, but at the same time, the new Nazis from the Azov battalion, they are very well equipped. They use civilians as human shield, because they are stationed in the neighborhoods among the buildings and the homes of the civilians. So obviously Russia doesn't want to cause such heavy, or to be the reason for the civilian casualties. So they will not be able to deploy all their military power and to risk the life of the civilians. This will take a lot of time, I think. Russia is very careful in this, as they call it, military operation. And at the same time, the Ukrainian side, they are using this in their advantage to equip again, to regroup, to receive military aid, and to keep their positions.
Okay, Diliana, can you give us an idea of how listeners can follow your work and keep track of what's going on?
Now I'm publishing my work on my website, diliana.bg, and this is where I now prefer to publish my investigation. My other media platform, armswatch.com, has been under constant DDoS attack. So unfortunately, I'm not accessible all the time, and that's why I'm using my personal website, diliana.bg.
Okay, could you just spell that for us, please?
Diliana, like my name, diliana.bg.
Okay, Diliana Kadashifa, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me, and hopefully your show, program, broadcast will not be censored.
Okay. Well, we hope not. We have been censored from the airwaves here in Bristol. So that's just kind of normal now. I mean, that was because of the COVID. We were covering the injuries people had been having with vaccines, and someone somewhere at the radio station decided that the people shouldn't hear this. Anyway, so censorship in the West, very much like censorship in the old Soviet Union. Quite amazing the way it's all turned around. Diliana Gatashva, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.